Hello, and welcome to our NABBW Teleseminar Series. Our guest expert this evening is Leanne Jashue, who will be entertaining and educating us on putting the ho-ho-ho back in your holidays and your life. But first, let me introduce myself and set the stage. For those of you who do not know me, I am Ann Holmes, the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which is found online in a couple of places. We have a website at nabbw.com, and we have a forum at boomerwomenspeak.com. We also have a fairly active Facebook page at facebook.com/nabbw. So our websites are the number one sites found via the major search engines when you search on the keywords baby boomer women, and we're pretty proud about that. So if you're not a member of the NABBW, you are welcome to join us. You'll find a handy link on the front page of our website, the NABBW website, which you can use to join. This call is an example of one of the many benefits we provide our members. We have recordings of approximately 90 past teleseminars, which are yours with membership in the NABBW, and they're all stored in the members-only area on the website. Now, as to the format of tonight's call, get yourself comfortable and make sure that in addition to having something to drink, you have paper and pencil to take notes, because I know that the topics we're going to cover will be just as fascinating for you as they have been for me. And also be in a place where it's okay to laugh, because I'm quite sure that you're going to be falling on the floor possibly with some of the things that Leanne will be telling us. But for the next 30 minutes or so, I'll have the phone lines muted, and she and Leanne and I will be talking. I've got a series of questions that I want to ask her. And after that, I'll open the lines for questions from the audience. If you have a question before the lines are open, please use the box on your computer screen to type in your questions. That way I'll be able to see them as they come in, and I'll relay them to Leanne when the time comes. Now, before we get started, let me share some of Leanne's background with you. After that, she and I will spend some time discussing that fun topic of how we can put the ho-ho-ho back in our holidays and our lives, and based on some of the things that I've been hearing from people in our NABBW forum, and including me trying to figure out how I'm supposed to get Christmas stuff done and still keep everything else going, I think we all need to hear what she has to say. So let's get started. Leanne Jashue, MPH, which stands for Master of Public Health, but she also says it's Mistress of Public Humor, is a stress management and humor expert who helps people manage stress, embrace change, and become healthier by learning to lighten up. She speaks at 50 to 60 conferences and workshops every year and is a member of the Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor, AATH. Leanne's philosophy is that using humor as a life management tool is not about remembering jokes you read on the internet or pulling pranks on your friends. It's about choosing to see the funny in life instead of the frustrating, about adding joy to others' lives instead of subtracting it, and about avoiding lifosuckers, a term that she's created that she says are people who suck the life out of you, and instead hanging around with people who make you laugh, which I think is a great plan. She's the author of 17 books, including How'd All Those Ping Pong Balls Get in My Bag, The Stressed Out Woman's Guide to Letting Go with Laughter, Not Guilty by Reason of Menopause, Confessions of a Semi-Natural Woman, and Bedtime Stories for Dogs. Leanne is the 2003 winner of the National Irma Bombeck Humor Writing Award for her true story on how her first mammogram caught on fire. I would love to hear that story. She teaches at both the University of Oregon and Lane Community College, is a humor columnist for the Register Guards Dash magazine, and is the former host of Women Under the Influence of Laughter on KOPT 1600 AM radio. In her spare time, she tries to remember where she parked. And I can certainly identify with that, too. When I go to Walmart, for example, I try to always go in the same row all the time, so I don't have to think about that. So I'm delighted to introduce our guest, Leanne Jashue.
Thank you so much, Leanne.
Oh, you're welcome. Before I launch into my questions, why don't I give you a brief opportunity to tell our listeners about the offer that you're making to those of the people who have joining us on the live
call.
Sure.
Yes, so two of my books, How'd All These Ping Pong Balls Get in My Bag, The Stressed Out Woman's Guide to Letting Go with Laughter, which is one title because I'm famous for my overly long titles for my overly short books because we have very little time to read, and Confessions of a Semi-Natural Woman, which is a collection of 99 of my funniest published columns, including the one that won the Irma Bombeck Award. And I went with 99 because I thought 100 seemed a little anal retentive. So 99 of those. Mm-hmm. So usually those two books are $27 plus shipping and handling. For anybody who is listening today and wants a special offer on this, you can get them both for $20 plus shipping and handling. And all you have to do is go to the website, place the order. My website is accidentalcomic.com, and then send me an email saying you heard it on NABBW, and I will give you the discount.
Excellent. That's a wonderful offer, and very, very timely, I think, too, as I know that many of us are trying to think of presents to give to people at this end of the year time. And having read several of your books, I know that they make great, great entertainment for people.
And so I am just old-fashioned enough to want to get a book,
uh-huh.
an actual paper book that I can sit in front of a fire with.
Oh, I understand that. I have got books that I can download. People, because we do a lot of books that I review, people are trying to send me books that I can download, and I know how to do it, but I keep telling them I don't know how to do it because I'd rather get a real book.
I see. Living a better life through lies about technology.
Right. Yeah.
I'm no better. I don't give my cell phone number to almost anyone because I don't want people to call me.
Well, I've tried a similar thing. I keep telling people, no, I don't have a cell phone, and my mother keeps saying, yes, you do. All right. Well, now that we've confessed to a few of our foibles that I think are good for a little chuckle, we've got a lot of good questions here to talk about. So why don't I start by asking you the first one, and we'll see where we go from there. My first question for you, Leanne, would be, how did you go from being a health educator to being a humorist?
Well, so basically I think that being a humorist, if done right, is continuing in my health education. So for 12 years, I ran the wellness program at the University of Texas Health Science Center at Houston. And that's my native accent right there.
Okay, I hear it.
And, I know. And I taught people, you know, the regular, eat more. I mean, eat less, eat better, exercise more, stop smoking, you know, all of the things that we know how to do. And when you've done that for 10 years or so, you're not only boring them to tears, you're boring yourself to tears, because unlike women's magazines where you can feature a triple chocolate fudge cake next to thinner thighs in 30 days, basically my messaging was all the thinner thighs in 30 days, healthier hearts, and in a year and a half kind of approach. And so I was looking for a way to kind of spice things up, and I accidentally took a comedy class. And it totally changed my approach to helping people think about their health behaviors. We started doing some Saturday Night Live-like skits where we would have a message, but the skit was funny. And so I started seeing that people really liked the humor part, and then I started studying the field of gelatology, which sounds like the study of Jell-O, but it's really the study of how laughter and humor affect the body, mind, and soul of human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I, you know, in the years after that, I discovered more and more research about how important laughter is. I mean, it does so many positive things that I had never been aware of as a health educator. And if I, as a health educator, had never heard of these health benefits of laughter, I knew that most people had not either. And so I continue to do health education, but just in one specific field, managing stress, living a healthier life through the application of more humor in our lives.
Okay, that makes sense.
Way more fun because people don't run away screaming, going, "Oh, it's the nutrition police! Oh, it's the exercise Nazi!" You know, you don't like. You get a kind of a complex when that's the way you're treated.
I bet.
And now people are like, "Oh, it's the." I was in Goodwill this morning. They had a grand opening near me at 7 a.m. So I didn't shower. I didn't put on any makeup. I'm going to this Goodwill for the grand opening, and I'm in there, and this woman goes, "You're the funny lady, aren't you?" And I'm going, "Oh, my God, I have no makeup on." But that's so much better, you know, than than being known as the person who's enforcing diet and exercise on people.
Well, I would think so, especially because I'm not sure that the person who's enforcing diet and exercise, I'm not sure that they have a really good success rate.
You have no control over anyone else's life.
Right. I was just going to say, well, maybe I'm just a bad patient, but I remember, I don't know, 6 or so years ago now, time flies, but I think it was around 6 years ago, I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and I had to go see a nutritionist who would be able to tell me now how I needed to be eating. And and I've got that all under control now. But at the time, what she was telling me was just so hard to absorb. You know, maybe something that would have been better done in a class rather than one visit with her, because trying to absorb it all in one visit I'm not sure I was that successful, but I kept reading stuff about it. And
would you like me to tell you how laughter affects type 2 diabetes?
Oh, I'd love to hear that.
Big study out of Japan, and in fact, I did a summary of the research that was published in Diabetes Care, I think is the name of the magazine. So basically, people with type 2 diabetes who laugh immediately following a meal reduce mm-hmm. their post-meal blood sugar spikes statistically significantly over those who don't laugh.
Wow.
So what people don't understand, it seems odd to most people to think about laughter having health benefits, because mm-hmm. we don't really have an understanding that laughter is a survival skill, that all mammals have it, that probably reptiles and birds have it as well. We just haven't done the studies yet. And basically there's two functions. One's called arousal relief, and that means if you get anxious, you get frustrated, you get impatient, you relieve that through laughter. We all do it. All the mammal species do it. And the other's called social bonding. And that's why mm-hmm. when you get together with friends, you don't have to say anything funny or do anything funny. You just start laughing because you've created this social bond with people. And so it makes sense, if you think of it that way, that there is a reason that we have a sense of humor and we're supposed to be using it, that we would have now hundreds of physiological benefits. You know, regular laughter reduces high blood pressure statistically significantly. It improves your chances of surviving cardiovascular problems and reduces your chances of getting cardiovascular problems. It increases interferon gamma and killer T cells, which are two of the strongest chemicals in our immune system in terms of warding off all kinds of diseases. It has been shown to enhance fertility. I mean, the power of laughter is an amazing thing. And, you know, 1 minute of belly laughing is the equivalent in terms of abdominal toning of 25 sit-ups, to which I fist pump.
Yes.
Now, personally, I don't think we all need to have abs like a dashboard. Abs like a washboard. I have abs like a dashboard. Because
mm-hmm. okay.
Now that I'm postmenopausal, I have that little airbag in front.
Right. I understand about that.
That's bruising.
Yes.
But so, you know, there's all these benefits of laughing that come from doing it. Unfortunately, we're kind of moving in the other direction. People are now typing LOL when they're not actually LOLing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have students on campus who actually say LOL instead of laughing. So, and you don't get any benefits from typing LOL or thinking mm-hmm. LOL. You've actually got to go to get any benefits, because it's a cardiorespiratory exercise when you laugh.
Now, I have other questions that I plan to ask you, but let me just jump in with this one. Are medical schools aware of this? Are they training doctors at all, or doctors to be in the benefits of laughter?
Well, you know, Patch Adams tried to initiate a program to teach physicians about this. I don't know how effective it has been because when I was running the wellness program at the University of Texas Medical School was one of our schools, and no, they weren't teaching this. I mean, it takes a long time. You know, we have Dr. Oz right now telling us about complementary medical approaches, you know, traditional Eastern approaches in other parts of the world and alternative supplements, for example, and that hasn't caught on. Back when I was running the wellness program, I brought massage therapists on campus, and the medical community just railed against that because, you know, they thought there was no evidence that massage therapy made you feel better. And anybody mm-hmm. who's ever had a massage, we don't need studies.
No.
All we need to do is lie there for 10 minutes and go, oh, that feels so good.
Exactly.
So, no, it's not. So one of the reasons there is a group called the AATH, the American Association for Therapeutic and Applied Humor, is to try to get the word out into the medical community and beyond about the importance of laughter. And the it's not just physiological benefits. It has, and especially for boomer women, of which mm-hmm. both you and I are one, but it has such great impact on memory, cognitive skill, productivity, creativity, because I don't know if you know this, but it is the law of gravity, not the guidelines. And anything that has mass will go south. And so mm-hmm. if at the beginning of your day you feel pretty creative and you can think well, and by 3 o'clock you feel like you need a nap or a Snickers bar because the oxygen which was in your brain is now in your hindquarters. And most of us don't do our thinking from that part of our anatomy. And so laughter has been shown to be one of the three best ways to move oxygen back into your brain. And I know as a stand-up comic, I memorize new sets fairly regularly. And there are studies now showing that people who do both writing and memorization, both dramatically and comedically, get just statistically significant cognitive benefits and memory benefits.
Okay, so that I guess you would call that a physiological benefit of laughter. Are there other physiological benefits?
Well, we talked about the hypertension reduction, mm-hmm. but I can tell you some other interesting ones besides diabetes and fertility. One is that when you laugh, you secrete an enzyme in your stomach that helps coat your stomach, kind of like Pepto-Bismol. And what most people don't know is that when you're under stress, which is a lot of time for many people, especially women, and we can talk about that in just a little bit, but your stomach is actually sending more electrical signals to the rest of your body than your brain is. So mm-hmm. under stress, your stomach is in charge. And so the more you can do to actually treat your stomach well, the better. So laughter is actually one of the ways to do that. When you laugh, you secrete an enzyme in your saliva that helps protect from upper respiratory infections like colds and the flu. So I always tell people, if I spit on you accidentally, just rub a little in and you won't need a flu shot because I laugh a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two of the other. But, you know, basically, since cardiovascular disease and cancer are our two biggest chronic diseases and our two biggest killers of men and women, and laughter actually reduces the risk of both significantly. That's all I need to know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really anything else is just gravy on top of that. But I have to say, all these benefits not only come from actually laughing, and mm-hmm. it's not, you know, thinking something is funny, but regular laughter. And I always say that you cannot save all your fiber for the weekend mm-hmm. and expect to be regular during the week. And the same is true for laughter. You have got to be doing it. My recommended daily allowance of laughter is at least once an hour, out loud, whether anything is funny or not. Because by doing it once an hour, you are only achieving the mean for American adults, which is
okay.
a sorry, sorry number.
Mm-hmm.
Children between 4 and 5 laugh about 200 to 300 times a day.
Okay. So then we get that all suppressed out of us by the time we become sober adults.
Well, yeah, it starts like at 7 when both ego starts to form at around 6 or 7. We become mm-hmm. aware of what other people are thinking about us, and we become judgmental of other people. And also we go to school in which we have to behave ourselves, and we're no longer allowed just to be thoroughly hedonistic little creatures. But the
mm-hmm.
idea is, even though we can't be 5, although I'm trying really hard to
mm-hmm.
be 5, when we have free time, which we must have to exist, Mm-hmm. We need to use it to be more like the inner five-year-old, to have recess, to play with friends, and that means actually being with friends rather than, you know, Facebook friends or mm-hmm. Skyping your friends. But play is, when I talked about all mammals having a laughter response, mm-hmm. is a laughter play response, and those two things go together. And five-year-olds don't laugh at jokes. They laugh at some jokes, but primarily most of that laughing they're doing comes when they're playing. And so we don't play. Most grown-ups don't play. We, you know, play chess and tennis and mm-hmm. Angry Birds, but none of that is right. playing. And so that's one of the reasons I teach improv. And during a two-hour session of teaching improv, we probably laugh more than most people laugh in a week. And I won't even say probably. We do laugh more than mm-hmm. most people laugh in a week.
All right. Well, I know you've covered psychological or physiological benefits of laughter, but I have you also talked about the emotional benefits? And I've been so busy listening that I haven't caught on that part of it was emotional.
Maybe a little bit, but quickly I can say that emotionally we know we're attracted to people who make us laugh. Mm-hmm. Men and women are attracted to laughter differently, in fact. When a man writes a personal ad saying he's looking for someone with a sense of humor and he's looking for a woman, it means he's looking for someone who will laugh at his jokes. And when a woman writes that ad, it means she's looking for someone to make her laugh. Mm-hmm. But even though there is that difference, laughter is one of the, because of the social bonding mechanisms, it's one of the ways that we are actually drawn to other people. And if you think about all of the studies about the importance of having a strong social circle or a lot of friends, especially in a chronic disease state, that's really, really important. And one of the best things you get from that is you get laughter because you socially bond with people who make you laugh.
Okay. So clearly we have problems in our workplaces because we don't allow people to be laughing every hour like you're talking about.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of people just assume they're not allowed to be laughing every hour. I will confront people at conferences and say, how do you know? Is there a rule? Has somebody ever said? I mean, I've been told that. I was told in one job, we don't pay you to have a good time. And mm-hmm. I quit because, you know, clearly if having a good time makes me more productive and creative and healthy, then I should be paid to do that because I'm better for the company if I am all of those things. But generally mm-hmm. we make this assumption, and it takes, just like everything else, it takes some pushing of the boundaries. But you're right. I mean, at work we have restrictions under which we must operate.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm all about pushing the boundaries. And, you know, I've been teaching organizations now for 20 years the importance and the value of having people who do regularly laugh at work, and hopefully that's catching on because there are a lot of companies who have freed things up and do things regularly to encourage laughter, like starting off staff meetings by letting people tell a funny story or a joke, you know, those kinds of things. That mm-hmm. having games at breaks so that rather than people, you know, sitting and texting each other, they're actually engaged in some kind of fun thing like Twister.
Mm-hmm. Well, since most of us probably haven't played Twister since we were kids, I guess a bunch of adults being... Well, I'm sure you have because you know the benefit of it, but for those who haven't been educated into the benefit of playing and having that kind of natural laughter, you know, I think that would catch people's attention if you were at a conference and they said, you can come over here and play Twister. I think that would...
Right. And, you know, the great thing about Twister is the older you get, the harder it is, and that makes it funnier. Mm-hmm. When you're good at it, when you're good at something, it's not funny. It's when you're bad mm-hmm. at it, which is one of the great things about laughter, is that so much of our life is about failure, and we're so afraid of it. That's one of the reasons we stress out so much. Talking about the holidays for a minute, we women create false expectations about what we're going to be able to achieve during the holidays, and then we fail, and we're afraid of that.
mm-hmm.
And so if we are okay with failing, if in fact we understand that failure brings not only success eventually, but it brings laughter while it's happening, it's an amazing way to approach life.
Absolutely. Well, that's really important for if anyone gets anything, nothing else out of this call, I think that that's something that that is worth remembering right there. Now, you've talked here, I've had us discussing the physiological and emotional benefits of laughter, and you've kind of alluded to the physiological and emotional consequences of overstressing, but are there any other consequences that we haven't discussed that you'd like to bring out?
I would just give one summary statement, that up to 90% of all of the reasons we seek out health care from physicians and other health care providers have too much stress as a major component. So if too much stress is responsible for 90% of what's going wrong with us, clearly the consequences are severe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Now, you made some comment earlier that you promised to come back to, and that was that women have more stress than men, and the case, can we talk about that a little bit and talk about why that is?
Sure, we could talk about it for days. Okay. So that's what the book, How Do All These Ping Pong Balls Get in My Bag, is about, because nobody had really addressed the issue of why women, we all know it. You ask any group of women, and you ask any group of men who has more stress, everybody knows it's the women, but we don't really understand why. And now that we have these things called functional MRI scans, where they put people in an MRI machine or put electrodes on their head and then they expose them to different stressors or different situations, we now understand these kinds of things. So basically, women's brains are wired differently than men's, so significantly so that they're now saying there is a male brain and there is a female brain. And no, ours are not pink.
But they're
like copper wire that's wound really tight so that one thought can trigger any other thought we've ever had. Because women associate thoughts or memories with emotion, and men only associate memories with emotion if there was a strong emotion when it happened. So we can get upset about something that happened 35 years ago. And it's natural because that's the way our brains are wired, and it's not the way men's brains are wired. And then there was that lovely thing that happened about 20 years ago, or 25 maybe, study out of Stanford that said because of the way our brains, women's brains work, we're better at multitasking. And so what did we do? We went out and did it more.
Right.
And in fact, we pride ourselves on our ability to juggle 14, 17, 23 things at a time. And studies have found that for men, typically more than two is too much.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we also know there's no such thing as multitasking. There's only
right.
attention switching. And so if you imagine what your brain looks like when you're doing that, it's, you know, it looks like you're having a heart attack in your brain by going back and forth between two things. So there's that. And then we have that nurturing hormone estrogen, which fortunately, postmenopausally, we have less of, especially for those people who are not, you know, having some kind of way to build estrogen back up. And so estrogen is the nurturing hormone. And so it's not unusual for women to go up to friends and relatives and complete strangers on a bus and say, you know what, I can help you do that.
Mm-hmm.
Without thinking about the negative consequences that it will have on us first. You know, that it's the whole put the oxygen mask on yourself
mm-hmm.
first and then on
right.
the person who needs it. And we women just don't do that. We have that nurturing instinct. And so we're giving out so much of our time and resources and not taking the time to replenish ourselves. So we have all of those things happening that cause us to have more stress. So that's why it's harder for us to let go. You know, most men, so about 10% of men have what is known as the female brain, and about 10% of women have what is known as the male brain. But generally speaking, most men, when they get stressed, they can do something physical and they're over it. They
okay.
don't hold grudges as long. They don't remember things. And we, you know, the stereotype of men not remembering birthdays and anniversaries, they just don't. It's not something that they're much better at memorizing things with statistics involved, like sports figures.
Mm-hmm.
But women, we hold on to things forever. And it's very hard for us to let it go because we have emotions that are associated with our thoughts.
Absolutely true.
So in a way, we have a...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, in a way, we have a lot we can learn from men. Mm-hmm. But they also have a lot they can learn from us when it comes to stress management and humor. Because women laugh 126% as often as men in this country. But I don't think that's nearly enough. If we have like six times the stress, 126% as often is only a quarter more. Mm-hmm. For those of you who... I was on the slide rule team in high school, and I know I'm dating myself by saying the word slide rule. But I was dating myself then, too, so I'm good.
Okay. Well, I remember people having slide rules in high school, so, you know, we're
I had it on my
boat.
Belt. I was very unpopular.
Well, no, I was not a person that math came easily to, so I strangely, because my dad's an engineer, and you know he was one of those slide rule guys. When I was a kid, he had one in his breast pocket. I think sometimes not all the time, but in some of the jobs that he had, that was something that he always had with him. But the math part didn't come naturally to me, so I can't claim to have got one on my belt like you. You win that one.
Well, you know, and a funny, here's another thing that most people don't realize is the part of your brain that does math is the same part of your brain that is able to figure out a joke. Because it's about incongruity theory, what does not belong. So if you think about like the SAT test, which of the following does not belong in this equation? So the part of your brain that can solve for X is the part of your brain that can figure out the punchline.
Oh.
And I think that's why all of my family is very mathematically inclined, and I was too. I actually went to graduate school to become a demographer, and instead I do comedy, and I don't think it's that big of a reach because of that.
All right. Well, I'm starting to see some parallels to what you're saying in other people that I know, so that does make sense to me. Now, moving along to my next question here, because this is fascinating, the things that we're covering, and I'm seeing that if I don't move along here, we aren't going to get all my questions in.
And that's fine. You know, whatever we cover is fine.
Well, that's exactly true. So,
we're talking about stress management, so I don't want you to stress yourself out.
Thank you.
You see the stress management expert in me and goes, calm down.
Well...
It's okay.
One of your books that I've read and enjoyed is the ping pong book, the one How'd All These Ping Pong Balls Get in My Bag, The Stressed Out Woman's Guide to Letting Go with Laughter. But I realize that not everyone listening to the call has had a chance to read that book. So would you share with us your ping pong ball theory?
Sure. So I believe that everyone in life carries around a big old bag full of balls of stress. And there are three different kinds of balls. There's bowling balls. Or there are bowling balls. Now that I teach grammar, I guess I should clean up my own. There are bowling balls, which are the major life stressors, like bankruptcy and divorce and finding out you have a chronic disease and the loss of a loved one. We all know what those are. Mm-hmm. And the good thing about bowling balls is we usually don't get a lot of them, but the bad thing is they weigh us down, and they usually affect us for life. Mm-hmm. Then you have tennis balls, and tennis balls are things that an analogy I use for things that we mistake for bowling balls when they're happening. So if you've ever gotten a speeding ticket and your heart rate went up and your blood pressure shoots through the roof and you feel it in the pit of your stomach and you're trying to think of a believable lie to tell the cop, you know that you're feeling fight or flight, which is what you should be using for bowling balls, but it's not really a threat to your life or health unless you decide to outgun the cop going 90 miles an hour, which you should never do. So, or if you have teenagers and they're in a surly point in their life, they feel like bowling balls. But eventually they will move out, and given the economy, they'll move back in for several years, but finally they'll move out again. And so they are tennis balls, because tennis balls are things that there is a resolution to, and they don't really negatively affect your life and well-being or those of your friends and loved ones for a long time. But even then, there aren't that many of those compared to ping pong balls, which are ego stresses. They all come from the way we judge ourselves and the way we judge others, and they're all truly trite and meaningless, and yet there are so many of them, from, you know, a missed deadline, what's somebody going to think of me, to my pants don't fit me any longer, to he said you look good, what did he mean by that, to the imaginary stories that we women in particular, you know, we're very good at creating conversations in our heads that never happened and then blaming people for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing women are really good at because of the way our brains function. Those are all ping pong balls, and there are so many of those. If you think about in your life, how many little triggers turn on your impatience and your frustration and your guilt and your embarrassment? There are probably hundreds during the day. And so we fill up our bag with ping pong balls, which means we don't have room for the actual stressors, and our bags are always full.
Mm-hmm.
And so when your bag is full, that is when you reach some kind of breaking point, emotionally, physically, spiritually, relationship-wise, because we become cranky people if we're carrying around a lot of extra stress all the time. And one of the best things that anyone can do is just say during the day as something frustrating happens, just say, this is just a ping pong ball. Because
mm-hmm.
now you have wrested the decision-making out of your stomach and put it into your brain. And your brain is much smarter. And if you can laugh at it, all the better. So I'll give you a quick story. I'm in a hotel doing a conference, and I go in the ladies' room, and I close the door, and I hear the door next to me close, and a woman says, hello. And I thought, well, she's friendly. And I said, hi.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, what are you doing? She's a little friendlier than I'd like.
Right,
I said,
right.
I'm getting ready for the next seminar. And she said, you want to come over? And I'm thinking, I don't know what to say. But then she whispered a little too loudly, I have to hang up my cell phone now. There's a moron in the stall next to me answering all my questions. And so I started laughing. And as I leave the stall, there are two women who've clearly been wanting to laugh and haven't, and because I started laughing at it, they started laughing, and I went and immediately introduced the next seminar with this story from the bathroom, because most of us eventually laugh at those stories, but we wait
mm-hmm.
too long. If you mm-hmm. wait too long, you put the ball in your bag. And here's the thing about ego stresses is the stress is gone, and the only thing you're carrying around is your reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
So if that happened to you and you're still feeling humiliated 6 hours later, that thing happened 6 hours ago. It doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the only stress that's there is self-created.
Good point.
And that's what I'm trying to get, you know, people to handle more. We need to control the things that we can control. One, there's a survey out that says 60% of the things that we worry about never happen. 20% have already happened, 12% we have no control over. And so if you do the math, that leaves 8%. And if you just spend your stress energy on 8% of what you're currently worrying about, imagine how healthy and joyous and optimistic and jovial you'd become.
Mm-hmm. Wow. 8%.
I know.
That's pretty significant.
I know. That's like dumping 92% of the balls out of your bag.
Okay.
And probably 92% of them are ping pong balls. Because
mm-hmm.
our ego, when I am in a workshop and I say to people, okay, now we're going to sing. And then we sing. And then I ask them, when I said we're going to sing, what did you think? And hands go up. No way, I'm not singing. I'm not any good at it. You don't want to hear me sing. And, you know, a couple people, I want to sing. But it's a way of identifying how powerful our ego's voices are.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really powerful. You know, that's why we don't take risks. That's why we're always afraid of failing. That's why we do things just because we think people will like us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've told us a little bit about the benefits of laughing at the ping pong ball things and laughing right away. But what about going back to those bowling balls? What happens
uh-huh.
if we laugh at bowling balls?
That's a wonderful thing. Laughing at bowling balls can help shave some of the weight off of them. It's a more difficult thing to do. I have been involved in many experiences where people have led me to that. My best friend Rhonda died of cancer 6 years ago. And she, you know, I was already firmly committed to the idea of laughter as a healthy behavior. But she proved to me that even though you cannot make laughter your savior. It cannot stop you from dying. You can live the best life possible by choosing to find the lighter side. And like when she had her hysterectomy, she put a sign on her door that said, "Come on in, I'm indecent." When she had her chemo and we came to visit her, she asked us to come as a group and put on silly plays and read like The Cat in the Hat to her. It was
okay.
So much fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you know, it truly made her life experience for what was left of her life just much more pleasant. And it really made a lasting impact in the rest of us that were involved in that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, so you get the choice. I've had people take I teach stand-up comedy as therapy, and I have for 20 years now here at in Eugene. And I've had people come in having just suffered a ping pong ball. One guy had had a stroke 3 months before. I had a young man who had just moved into his 7th foster home at the age of 11. And they actually took their bowling balls and made comedy on stage about them. I've had 6 students who were in chemotherapy when they took the class. So, you know, it's about allowing yourself to say, I have a choice, and if my attitude only makes things worse, and if laughter can actually boost a lot of the physiological responses that I need to boost when I'm feeling sick, for example, then maybe I should choose this.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what causes the most of the stress in our lives? Is it mostly caused by those ping pong balls, or...
It's mostly caused by us.
Okay.
We cause our own stress by the way we think, the way we act, and what we don't do, because we're just not aware. It's not a deal about having more time to, you know, meditate, which would be great. Anything you can do for stress management that has no negative consequences, so you don't want to drink, you don't want to drive fast. But anything you do, like petting an animal, watching a goldfish, baking cupcakes, as long as you're not eating all of them yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
Why I don't bake cupcakes, because that would be very bad for me. Painting a room. Anything you do to manage your stress that actually makes you feel better is great and has positive physiological benefits, because we're given that part of our physiology with purpose to survive. But we don't really think much about, you know, how something as childlike, because that's where our sense of humor starts, you know, developmentally it starts at day 91 usually. That's when babies first laugh and it's no longer gas. So every human has a sense of humor. But we don't think about the power of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've forgotten what the question is altogether.
I think I was talking about what causes most of the stress in our lives.
Oh. We do, because the voices in our heads that say all kinds of crazy things, and the fact that we create, you know, if we worry about 92% of things we have no control over or aren't going to happen, or like how many people are concerned about the end of the world, for example? I mean, truly, you have give it a little bit of stress. I remember when Y2K came around and how many people were so concerned about that and put so much of their stress energy into it, and then it was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And studies have found that if you anticipate negative, you physiologically respond as if it's already happened. And if you anticipate positive, you physiologically respond as if it's already happened. So those people who say, well, I'll just, you know, if I worry, I can help myself, or at least I won't be disappointed. Actually, you create more stress by thinking negatively.
Okay, so back to the importance of positive thinking.
Yeah.
Then.
Well, it's like, so there's an Indigo Girl song, one of my favorite groups, that says, let me get it right, darkness has a hunger that's insatiable, and lightness has a call that's hard to hear. And I think in our lives we go through it, and we're exposed to so much negativity in the media, and, you know, with technology now, everybody's connected to some kind of media all the time, and television news is about all the bad things that have happened and how we're supposed to be angry and fearful and sad, and all of those things. And then commercials are, the whole purpose of commercials is to make us lack self-confidence, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Our hair is thinning and we look old and our eyebrows, for God's sakes, are insufficient for what? I don't
right.
know. And yet, so we're exposed to all of that negativity and that we really don't have some regular source of saying, lighten up, let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And we tend to get into habits that are formed by what we're exposed to.
Okay, so would you go so far as to say we should avoid the media?
I would say you should choose the media to which you expose yourself. So I teach in the School of Journalism, and I write regular humor columns for which I have to kind of know what's going on in the world. I never watch
right.
the news. I watch Colbert. I watch The Daily Show. If I'm going to get my news, I'm going to laugh at the same
uh-huh.
time. And eventually you find out anything. You do not.
Mm-hmm.
And so people who sit watching 24/7 news, especially when there's some big story that hits, have been shown to have increased levels of stress. I would also go so far as to say dump the LIFO sectors in your life. Because
mm-hmm.
we catch the mood of the people we spend the most time with. And if the people you spend the most time with are raining on your parade or teaching you how to be negative about stuff or inhibiting your natural sense of humor, then one of the best things you can do is disconnect and find people who bring joy and laughter into your life and
mm-hmm.
add them as friends.
Right. Well,
it's not that hard.
Yes. Well, I have a business associate who I think made that decision after she had a car accident and has never physically recovered 100% from the car accident. But while she was recovering, I think that she realized what a negative influence her mother was in her life. And so she actually is a person who took the step to, so to speak, emotionally divorce herself from,
mm-hmm.
from her mother because she needed to stay in a realm of positiveness.
Absolutely.
So.
And all I can say is ditto.
Okay.
You need, for your own safety, well-being, and sanity, and sometimes the cutoff isn't permanent and it's
mm-hmm.
not, you know, really a cutoff, but minimize the amount of time you spend with people who are sucking the life out of you, because that's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and
all right.
But, you know, it's not that hard to make new friends. I am 56, and last year was the last time, and not that long ago last year, I went up to someone and said, I really like you. Will you be my friend? It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy when we're three.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder when we're grown-ups because of our ego. But once you do it, people either think you're crazy, but usually they think, you know what? Nobody's asked me to be their friend in ages. I would love to do that.
Great. Well, I'll keep that in mind. Give it a try. I think it couldn't hurt. So let's talk a little bit about the holidays and the stress that
yes.
the holidays bring. Because holidays are supposed to be fun, and I remember a time, I'm not quite sure how old I was, but I was somewhere in high school, and I was the oldest in my family, and my mother believed in training me to be able to go out and live on my own, because she felt that when she first got married, she was totally incapable of knowing how to cook or how to make a decision or you know, how to go to the store and make buying decisions on what you're going to buy at the store. So she believed in training me so that I would be prepared to go out into the world. But I remember saying to her at some point, probably in high school, where I said, you know, the holidays really aren't fun, are they? I always thought they were fun when I was a kid, but now you're telling me they're just stressful. So that
but
was
if you
a
think
really...
about it, who are the holidays stressful for?
Well, I think we'd have to say women.
Yeah. And so there again, it's our own darn fault. We create these expectations for, A, everything's going to be perfect. You know, the family hasn't gotten along all year, but we're going to come together, and it's going to be beautiful, and we're all going to love each other again.
Mm-hmm.
And, B, we don't have time. Most women, most of the time, are going to fast food or takeout, and yet for 2 weeks, we are going to be Betty Crocker, June Cleaver again.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Even though we still have the same work schedule, we still have the same other responsibilities, and now we're going to add this magically because Santa and his elves have sprinkled fairy dust on us or something. I think it's the same exact thing as believing in the fairy tales. You know, a lot of women get married because of fairy tales, and they are looking for Prince Charming and happily ever after. Well, Santa Claus is no different. The whole idea that we can have perfect holidays. Most men don't suffer from stress over the holidays, except the stress that the women put them under.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole idea of what we have to do for the holiday, we don't have to do any of that. Those are all ping pong mm-hmm. balls. Those are all generated by our egos. And I have read many stories and talked to many people who have just decided, you know what, I'm not doing it this year. Just not mm-hmm. doing any of it. I'll buy gifts for a few people in my family, but I'm not preparing a big meal. I'm not sending out, you know, holiday cards, although I think e-cards are helping with that problem a lot
mm-hmm.
Because you don't have to get those out way in advance if you've opted to go e-card. But it's false to believe you have to do these things. And it's hard because, you know, we have family traditions, but basically most men would be just fine just taking, you know, the time to watch ball games and,
mm-hmm.
and eat burgers.
Right.
So, again, it's women creating some kind of fairy tale-like approach to something that's almost impossible. And I will say, if you can't just cut yourself off from the fairy tale, there are ways to use your sense of humor. Like if you know you're going to be somewhere where you're going to stand in line for a long time, which is something that happens during the holidays, and most of us are impatient people,
mm-hmm.
then make sure you have a book, an e-book, something on your smartphone that is funny that you can
mm-hmm.
watch, and make sure that you don't just accidentally look at it. But your plan is, if I find myself getting impatient, if I find myself getting frustrated at, you know, lines, waiting, any of that kind of stuff, I am going to pass time by amusing myself because I know that by doing that, I will physiologically and emotionally be better for it.
Okay.
And another great tip is for everyone that you feel that you must buy something for, find something funny for them. Because that way you're in the mindset of, A, paying really good attention to them, because in order to find something funny, they'll appreciate you pay more attention to who that person actually is. And, B, you're looking for funny stuff, so you're
mm-hmm.
amusing yourself.
All right. Now, that leads me to one of the questions that I had in mind to ask you, which is, I think you've dealt with it a little bit, but I'm betting that there's more to it. So that question was, how do we get from frustration or confusion or another negative like humiliation, how do we make a faster trip from being there to laughter? How can we do that quicker?
Well, it basically is about being aware of the fact that of the emotional turn that you've made, being aware
mm-hmm.
of the moment you become frustrated and saying to yourself, this is a ping pong ball and I'm going to choose to find something funny. So I'm going to tell you something that's got a little diagram. So if you think about how a joke works, a
mm-hmm.
joke has two parts and they're setup and punchline, right?
Mm-hmm.
So setup, you can imagine being a straight line because it's telling you a story, and the punchline deviates from that straight line. It doesn't go where you expect it. That's why it works, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about life, life is, the straight line is what we expect our life to be. We go out, let's say we're going to the post office to mail packages, and we get there, and for some reason, even though it's happened every time we've gone at the holiday season, we don't expect there to be 400 people there.
Right.
So it deviates. So it looks
mm-hmm.
exactly like the pattern for a joke. The only difference between those two things is in real life, where those two lines intersect, we get impatient, frustrated, angry, humiliated, confused, guilty, and more things than that. And in
mm-hmm.
comedy writing, we choose to convert those emotions into funny. And so if you could become aware of that exact pinpoint moment when you're starting to feel, you know, especially the three easiest attitudes to make funny are confusion, embarrassment, and frustration. Well, how many of us feel that 200 or 300 times a day? So if
mm-hmm.
you start thinking about, you know, there's a saying in comedy writing that comedy writers wake up hoping something will go wrong so they have something to write about.
I suppose.
And that, That, and it's true. I've been writing comedy for 20 years, and if things didn't go wrong, like last year I broke my nose walking into a plate glass window, and it was like the first thing I did was thought, I'm going to get the best story out of this. Mm-hmm. And so it changes your attitude. When something goes wrong, you think to yourself, it may not be funny now, but I'm going to have something funny to tell people.
Exactly.
So
what
it's
a great
really
way
about
to
a
look
mindset.
At it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are there other actions of that nature that we can take so that we can lighten up and let go of some of those stress?
Well, one of the other things that I recommend is that people keep a humor diary. So
okay.
You write in it on the left-hand side, and if you're doing this in a high-tech manner, I'm the kind of person who likes to write on pieces of paper. On the left-hand mm-hmm. side, you write all the things that have caused those negative emotions that day. And on the right-hand side, you write anything that you've sought out to be funny. So you saw a funny bumper sticker or you watched a funny video, and you put them all down so that when you look at your day, you can see balance.
Okay.
And you can start thinking about these. Are, what you get is a list of things that you can now predict will make you laugh. Mm-hmm. And then you can start putting them in your life without having to. So without having to wait for something frustrating, I'm going to put something funny in my life. And I know that from this list, like for me, I have dachshunds. I have three of them. And one of the reasons I have dachshunds is they're hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
And so all I have to do is stop and pay more attention to them than whatever it is that's causing me to freak out momentarily. And suddenly I've got laughter naturally. And you actually said something at one point a little earlier. You said natural laughter. And there's a word for that. It's called Duchenne laughter, D-U-C-H-E-N-N-E. And it's from a French man. And it means heartfelt laughter, not mm-hmm. coming from funny. Coming from soul. And when you're talking about dogs and young children and any kind of animals, that's why videos about cats in the shower and dogs dancing and young children laughing are so popular, because it resonates at a deeper level than some person standing up telling jokes, which I say as a person who makes part of her living as a standing up telling mm-hmm. jokes. But I would still rather you laugh with your dogs and your children. Because
okay.
it's a more sincere laugh, and it gets you more powerful benefits.
Oh, that's just wonderful information. I appreciate
well,
and I'm sure
you.
Everyone on the call here didn't know that, so that's really cool to know. I'm looking at my clock here, and I'm seeing that our time is flying by, so I'm going to suggest that I will open up the call, and that means that anybody who's listening who has a question for you, this is a time when you can ask that question. And I've got one question that came in to get us started here, came
okay.
in advance, and it's from Bonnie in South Wales, New York, and she says, well, let's see, she says she would like to know if you have any suggestion for a good G-rated DVD that she could play at Christmas Eve when she has eight people, family members over. She says she wants something that's light and funny, and how do you stay above the hassle of shopping and house cleaning, et cetera, like that during this season?
Well, so, you know, there are many holiday movies, DVDs that are funny, and it, you know, our senses of humor are all different, but I love Elf with Will Ferrell.
Okay.
Especially
right.
because Bob Newhart is in it, and Bob Newhart just makes me laugh. And I
oh,
think
he is amazing.
He is amazing, and the two of them together are amazing, especially because one is very big and one is very small. So you have that's incongruity. That's two things
mm-hmm.
that don't belong together. So I could recommend that. But and it doesn't have to be something holiday related. If you beforehand you do a little questionnaire of everyone who's coming and ask them what their favorite funny TV show is. And then you collect some of those and you play them. So you TiVo them, or you go out and get a DVD with, like, for example, I love The Big Bang Theory. It doesn't matter. And I know a lot of people who do. And so
mm-hmm.
if I had a group of people and seven of them say they like The Big Bang Theory, we would just watch The Big Bang Theory.
Mm-hmm.
And as regards to the housekeeping, and I say, you know, a lot of dust on things looks like imitation snow. So just let it be.
Good plan.
It just looks like you're living in a snow globe.
All right. I like that. I've never been a fan of dusting, so I'll keep that one in mind.
It just, it doesn't go anywhere. You're just displacing it.
Right. That's one of the things that has always challenged me about dusting, although now I have a feather duster on a long telescoping stick kind of a thing, so I can use that. I'm trying to convince myself that the feather duster is more effective, but maybe it's just more fun to use. I'm not quite sure about that.
Well, and that's not a but, that's an and.
Okay.
That's something we learn in improv, is we need to start living our life according to yes and instead of yes but. Mm-hmm. Yes but is how we live most of the time, is, you know, somebody says something and we go yes but, which means I'm negating what you're saying. Here's what I have to think, and mine is more important because it's coming from me and my ego. And yes mm-hmm. and means things can be more than one thing, and I'm mm-hmm. going to be open to a world of possibilities that I have closed myself off to. It's just a wonderful way to live.
I think it sounds fabulous. I'm looking forward to putting it into play immediately. Anybody else here on the call that would like to ask Leanne a question? All right, it sounds like we have shy people here tonight.
It's a quiet Leanne. Bunch.
Right.
I don't
Maybe
bite. Well, I do bite, but you're too far away. I've been living with dachshunds for 27 years. At this point, I bite. But mostly I just wag.
Okay. You never bit one of the dogs, did you?
Oh, no. Some people on the other
hand. I've heard that man bites dog is news. You know, they're saying dog bites man isn't news, but man bites dog is news. So I just had to use my sense of humor there. So
The fact that people are less in control of their emotions and attitudes than dogs are, it shouldn't be news.
Mm-hmm. Good point. So how would you suggest that we use our sense of humor to let go of that need to have the perfect holiday?
Create an imperfect holiday. So in our minds, we've created this story. The story is how everything goes exactly right and it's perfect. And instead create the imperfect holiday. Last night I watched Modern Family. It was a rerun of last year's holiday episode where everything mm-hmm. went wrong. The tree fell off the roof of the car and got run over by a truck. The angel from the tree got run over by a truck. Everything went wrong, and, of course, it was perfect. And the more you can start seeing that actually it's we remember what's imperfect a lot better than we remember what's perfect, and not necessarily negatively. It's, you know, your favorite part of a holiday or a wedding or something is going to be something that didn't go as planned. And mm-hmm. it's memorable, and you have, you know, some kind of connection to it because of that. And so rewriting a story about how it can be the worst, and that's one of the things that if you watch the right holiday movies, they're about horrible holidays, and then you'll mm-hmm. feel much better because by comparison you've done so well. Have you watched the Griswolds Christmas, uh-huh. for example? So create a different story. A story that allows you to feel better about yourself instead of worse.
Okay. That's just reminding me of when I was about six, I was in my uncle's wedding. I say uncle, obviously aunt and uncle, but it was my father's brother that was getting married. And we had traveled a long way from Michigan to Wisconsin to come for the rehearsal. And I remember at the rehearsal, I was supposed to be a flower girl. So I was the lead flower girl. My sister, who's 2 years younger than me, was also a flower girl. So if I was six, then, you know, she was four. But I was the first one heading down the aisle, and I remember that for years and years and years I was so ashamed of this situation that I'm going to tell you about, and now I've gotten to a point where I can laugh about it. But the background was that I was really worn out and tired by the time we got to the rehearsal, and there was this long discussion about whether I was supposed to drop the petals from my flower girl basket or not. And I realized as I started walking down the aisle that I really didn't know what had ever been decided. Was I supposed to drop the petals or not? So I got halfway down the aisle, and I'm thinking and thinking and thinking, am I supposed to be throwing these petals or not? Am I supposed to be throwing? I want to do it right. I want to do it perfect, you know, because, you know, she picked me to be the the first flower girl, and I'm the first one done. So I turned around and went back and asked.
Oh, that's
And when I think about that
story.
As an adult, I think, you know, the organist who has the music all timed and, you know, was no plan in it for a little girl goes back. But, you know, so I was mortified about that for years.
How quickly ego takes over. You're six.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
And had you been five, you could have taken your clothes off on the way down.
Right,
and
yes.
Just ego hadn't started developing yet. And the good thing is that ego starts to disappear again. Some people it's late 60s, some people 70s, 80s. For me, I'm intentionally, that's one of the things every night I say, let me let go of ego, because
mm-hmm.
ego has just really no benefit to me. And so if you make, when you're going out and making friends, make some friends who are under 5 and over 80.
Okay.
I have this friend, her name is Patrice. She took my comedy class 3 years ago because I have everybody tell us why you're taking this class. And she said, all my friends have died and I don't know anybody. And I live in a retirement community and nobody ever leaves their apartment and I need some friends. So she took the class and she was voted the funniest person in Eugene 2 years later. And so I took her to brunch, and it's, you know, we haven't seen sun in a long time. I live in the Pacific Northwest, and
mm-hmm.
she's tanned. She's 80 and tan. And I said, Patrice, why are you tan? And she said, well, I'm now on Match.com looking for a man, and I thought I should look good. So she went
okay.
to a spray tan facility, and she said she looked great when she left, but when she got home, she's taken off her clothes, and she realizes parts of her hang in different places than they did when she was standing there. She said, I look like the mission. And it's the people like that who
mm-hmm.
are able to take, you know, one of the ways we promote is look at the energy we give to anti-aging.
Mm-hmm.
The anti-aging means death.
Mm-hmm.
If you are aging, you are alive. If you are not aging, you are dead, because you will age
right.
no matter what you do. And we spend so much time and energy on, let's not get outlined. Prove we have had laughter in our lives. It's just so silly. So people who have lost or let go of ego tend to be really young or really old and make the best friends.
Okay. Well, whether
now, or not on Match.com.
That leads me to one more question, and then I probably think that we should wrap things up, but I've got this
yeah,
one more question
go
here.
To.
Does the sense of humor change as we age?
It does. Typically, so there's a developmental timetable with children and sense of humor. You know,
mm-hmm.
like young kids don't understand any joke that is linguistic because they don't understand words, but they understand cue, and that's funny to them. Mommy's here, mommy's gone. That's basic little incongruity. And then middle school, we start seeing sarcasm because, you know, our self-worth declines, and the only way we feel good about ourselves is putting other people down. And we see a huge amount of potty humor, which starts at 5, but it really, you know, becomes predominant in middle school and high school. It what happens, especially with women, as we get older, as our estrogen surges and that need to nurture happens, we tend to not find funny things that we used to find funny when we were really young. Not really young, but high school young.
Mm-hmm.
Because
okay.
now our main concern is, so I'll give you this example. Drew Carey was once asked the difference between a male and female sense of humor, and he said, if there's somebody at the mall and they fall down the escalator and they fart at the same time, a man will think that's the funniest thing ever. And a woman will go up and go, oh, my God, are you okay? Can I help you? And then she'll go home and she'll call her friend and go, the funniest thing happened at the mall today. Because we still find it funny, but we have to bury it in this need to do for others
mm-hmm.
and to make sure that others are okay. And so a lot of those kind of prank-related, a lot of my students in college, 19, 20-year-olds, the girls and boys find prank really funny. I know very few middle-aged women who think that pulling pranks on other people is funny. It's
mm-hmm.
more considered a male sense of humor because it's testosterone-based, and it's a third theory of why we laugh, and it's called superiority. And testosterone is more about, you know, aggression and competition, and estrogen is not. Not that we women don't do that too, but generally
mm-hmm.
speaking, it's more of a male kind of thing.
All right. Well, Leanne, it's just been really great talking to you this evening, and you've shared some wonderful information here. So I really thank you for being my guest and for the great discussion on how we can learn to use laughter as a way to relieve our stress, which we all need to do during the holidays and also for the rest of our lives. So I want to remind our listeners that you can learn more about Leanne at her website, which is accidentalcomic.com. That's accidentalcomic.com. And remember that just in time for the holiday season, Leanne is offering a special deal to those of you who are listening on the call tonight, and that was that if you order copies of both How Do All Those Ping Pong Balls Get in My Bag and Confessions of a Semi-Natural Woman, you'll get them for $20 plus shipping and handling instead of the $27, but you need to send Leanne an email so that she knows that you are on the NABW call and that you qualify for it. Is that how we want
to
do it?
That's correct.
Leanne?
You got it exactly right.
All right.
And also, while you're there, there is a free e-newsletter there, too. And I think sometimes it helps to have something pop up monthly to kind of counteract all the negative stuff from media to remind you about, oh, yeah, I can choose to be happy.
Right. Excellent. I was actually looking at it today when I was on your site, so I should have also mentioned that to people, but I was trying to rush things along here. So I'm glad you brought it out. It's a great newsletter. So thank you, Leanne, for being my guest. Thanks for our listeners for joining us, even though none of you were willing to ask us any questions except for the one. We'll forgive you for that. And hopefully you all have benefited from this and will be able to have a little bit less stress during this holiday season and moving forward for the rest of your life. So thank you, everyone. Thank
and
you, especially
thanks for having
Leanne.
Me, Anne. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, I did too. So thank you, and I'll say goodbye for now.
Okay. Happy holidays, right. Everybody.
Happy holidays. Bye
now. Bye.